Events have seen an unprecedented upheaval around the world, and many companies are now considering either hosting or participating in virtual events, defined for our purposes today as networking or conferencing opportunities that take place online. I would argue that while it is impossible to recreate the experience of attending a live event in person, there is definitely a place for online events. I'm Janine Love, editor of Signal Integrity Journal. Welcome to the next segment in the Marketing in the Age of COVID-19 series, sponsored by Microwave Journal and Signal Integrity Journal. It's called Virtual Events, How to Find Success. I've invited Marie Hattar, CMO of Keysight, to join us. Welcome, Marie.
Thanks, Janine. It's great to be here.
I've also invited Carl Sheffers, my colleague at Horizon House, who works on EDICon China and EDICon Online. Welcome, Carl.
Thanks, Janine.
Today, I'll ask you both to share your observations, successes, and warn of any pitfalls for virtual events. Marie, Keysight has long been a participant in industry events, as well as hosting its own customer-centric ones. Due to COVID-19, Keysight canceled its planned face-to-face customer events and transitioned to a virtual format. Can you tell us a bit about this decision process and explain the different types of formats you offer and why they were chosen?
Thanks, Janine. First of all, thank you for having me on today. And events are definitely a hot topic for marketers these days. And of course, it's going to continue to be an area of discussion and transformation long after this pandemic is over. First and foremost, Keysight puts the health and safety of our employees and their families first. It's just part of our core and what we do. These are unprecedented times, and we understand that it's critical to find new ways to market to our customers and interact with them. But it must be done in a way that prioritizes the safety of our employees. So shifting to virtual events was the best way to achieve this. And we actually offer up our events in a variety of different formats. Sometimes you find success with a certain format and it's tempting to stick with that. But in this environment, you really have to try out a few different things to see what works for you and what type of audience you're engaging with. So we've always had webinars, which was our form of virtual event, but now we're looking at truly virtual seminars, truly virtual events per se, and looking at how we can better engage and interact with customers in those that as best as possible either innovates to replicate the live experience or looks to transform it into a slightly different format that is somewhat more like a live experience, so you get much more of that interaction. So it's really all about making the audience feel like they're participants versus bystanders, because when you're virtual, we all know it's really easy to log in and walk away.
So Keysight recently launched the virtual 5G Innovations, which was 6 live virtual events over 2 days at the end of March. Can you tell us a bit about the experience, including what your team learned and how future events might be different?
Yeah, so this was the first time that Keysight had to replace an entire face-to-face event with a virtual-only experience. And honestly, it was nothing short of Herculean. It was a whatever-it-takes effort by multiple teams across the company. To try to replicate the live from the event or live from the scene feel, the content needed to be dynamic. It had to be completely rethought out. It's very different when you're face-to-face with someone and you're turning the knobs and showing them an instrument at a live event versus how do you communicate that experience virtually. We ended up having to do a blend of live presentations as well as some pre-recorded sessions. We made sure the Q&A were always live so people felt very engaged. And against all odds, the team pulled it off, and I was extremely pleased with the results. Also, with our offices closing during this time to practice social distancing, it was very interesting as to what equipment we had access to so we could even record the demos or not. So there was a lot of, I would call it, challenges, just because people didn't have all the stuff at their home for them to be able to do this. And so that was, as I said, it was Herculean. But I never thought I'd see the day where I'd see product managers jumping in front of a camera to record presentations and demo owners hunkering down to write their scripts and seeing it done from their phones or their iPads. It was pretty amazing. The event drew over 2,500 registrants, so it was a great success as far as I was concerned. And we actually had over 1,000 live viewers and attendees. So they really seemed to enjoy the live interactive elements of this.
Yeah, that sounds like a great success. So Carl, in 2019, Horizon House launched EDIcon Online, which was a virtual conference for the electronics industry that had multiple tracks. Can you tell us why you made the decision to launch that event and how you made some of the format decisions, such as length, talk, topics, et cetera?
Well, yeah, I wish I could say that it was tremendous foresight on our part to transition that. But actually, we came to the realization after the third year of the live EDIcon USA event that we weren't going to be able to generate enough attendance to satisfy the large number of exhibitors that were supporting the event. It was clear, however, that there was great interest in the content that was being presented. So we decided to pivot to a virtual event that took place last September on three consecutive days with three different dedicated tracks. That event was very successful with about 2,000 registrants. So we were very pleased with that. Following that event, we did some surveys, and based on the survey results, we did tweak the event for 2020. And this year we're having it every Tuesday in the month of October. So we found that there was some attendee fatigue. Having it three straight days and spreading it out would be more effective while still keeping it as an event in the 1 month for promotional purposes. So there'll be four days this year, each one with a dedicated track. The first one on is actually sponsored by Keysight as the platinum sponsor of the 5G, IoT, and automotive day. We also have tracks on PCB interconnects, signal integrity and power integrity, and radar antennas. The mix is every day starts off with a keynote, and then is followed by invited presentations along with sponsored workshops. So we're very excited about this year's event.
Marie, you mentioned earlier about how your team had to pivot to do a virtual event. Now that you've had this kind of rapid fire experience, how do you find planning a virtual event different from an in-person one? So like, what does the skill set look like for a virtual event team as opposed to a live event team?
It is a different skill set, that's for sure. You need to have both a digital platform knowledge and experience in addition. And by digital platform, I don't mean like our digital scopes. I mean things like the platforms you're using that are producing the webcast, for example, for you, and know what they're capable of, in addition to having the technology acumen of what you're delivering. Because you really want to make the online experience as interactive as possible, otherwise you lose the attention of someone. And that's something that you don't even think about when you're doing a live event, because it's natural. You're talking to each other. You're interacting one-to-one. Or even if you're speaking in front of a large group, there's people sitting next to you. So there's some of that human interaction. Well, in a virtual event, you don't have that. So you want to try to replicate as much of that as possible, whether it's with online chats, whether it's with queries as you go through the presentation, audience participation, having them vote, or whether it's simply making sure you take pauses throughout the session to actually address Q&A versus leaving it all till the very end. So really a combination of knowing what you're talking about, making sure you're eloquent in front of a camera, which is a different skill set. It's amazing what tips and tricks you have to tell people when they're speaking in front of a camera versus the natural way they would normally speak live, in addition to having the technical prowess of your subject matter.
Any other tips on increasing interaction between attendees and speakers besides the things you just mentioned?
So many different platforms allow you to also have like group chats that you can open it up to attendee participation. So a lot of platforms just allow you to ask the presenter, but many of them give you this interaction capability. There's some platforms that allow you to have, you know, sort of avatars and you're walking around that you could potentially have a pseudo social interaction if you want. It really depends how far you want to take it. You know, a lot of our engineers just give me the data, just the facts, ma'am, nothing but the facts. And if I have questions, just answer them. So we try to make sure it's very streamlined, but we do want to enable a platform and interactivity so that they feel engaged.
Okay, great. So it sounds like you kind of have to sift through the available platforms to see what best meets your audience. They may not love the bells and whistles, or they may love them. So some insight is good. Yeah. Okay, thank you. So Carl, for in-person events, there's many opportunities to communicate to potential attendees and generate excitement about attending. How can that be achieved with a virtual event? So how do the promotional timelines differ, and like, how do you reach out?
I don't think there's a lot of difference in the way that you promote a virtual event as opposed to a live event. And there's still plenty of opportunity to do so and to generate excitement around it. We do that with our webinars, our Frequency Matters video and podcast series, and with EDICon Online. We use the same mix of print, digital, and social media, and it actually works quite well in promoting the events and generating excitement about them. You know, as far as the interaction at a virtual event, it's limited, but I think Marie did a nice job of pointing out the various options that you can do to generate that kind of interaction and community.
So we've talked a lot about how to kind of pivot to a virtual event, and you alluded to some of the things you did differently, Marie, but do you guys plan different types of content for the virtual event? And if so, kind of what tips would you give people on making their plans for content?
So always you have to keep your audience in mind and what you're trying to do for that specific event. It really isn't that different from a live one, but you just now have to do a little more work because it is virtual. And so in terms of tips, keep it short. People's attention span is a lot less when you're online than when you're physically there, and you have much more of a sense, that like a sense experience, a smell and everything experience. You know, here you're just interacting with the screen of your television, of your PC, for example. So I would say shorter is always better with online. Mix it up, you know, have different size segments. Normally in a typical setup, you would have, okay, you know, 3 half-hour presentations, then a break, then something, you know, else to that effect. Mix it up, have them be 10 minutes, have them be 15 minutes, make it a little irregular. Make sure you do allow for breaks, because that's the way you don't lose their attention span. So those are things, you know, in addition to creating your content, which is normally what you do when you go to a live event, these are things now you have to plan for and introduce as you roll out your virtual event. But first and foremost, make sure you're creating the right content that your audience would want to see. But that would go on any event, whether it's live or virtual.
So keeping in touch with what your audience wants, again, is a prevailing theme here throughout your whole event planning. So one of the interesting things about a virtual event is that it gives us the opportunity to reach more of a global audience. So Marie, does that change your production plans? For instance, do you use any closed caption or translation services for your events?
Actually, we do. We try a variety of things because we are a global company. We try to, you know, act global but think local, if you want. And so a lot of times what we do is we supplement our tracks with local language participation from our local field engineers and application engineers that are on site. So we'll have segments that may be initially in English with some closed captioning, but then it'll segue to different segments that are local that are available within that specific region. So, you know, we really do try to see what works. And of course, the best response ends up being the surveys after the fact, the interactivity that you have during the session. And ultimately, it's how many people register based on the topic interest of what you're presenting also.
So Carl, how do you measure the success of a virtual event? Like what words of advice or perhaps warning would you offer a company that's looking to launch its own virtual event series?
Well, I think, you know, our virtual events are very measurable and metrics driven. Using EDICON Online as an example, again, you know, sponsors are provided after the event with a full dashboard report that includes full demographics, total number of registrants, number of live registrants, so the conversion rate, and number of questions that are asked. And then they continue to receive the leads for months after the event as the archive for on-demand viewing. So I think it's the events are quite measurable, perhaps even more so than a live event.
Marie, do you have anything to add to, you know, how you measure the success of your events? I know that you said that they that you had good attendance, and that was one metric that you tracked.
Sure, we actually are very metric heavy in how we measure anything we do, whether it's a live event or a virtual one. We track it all the way down from what kind of advertisements we're doing to drive attendance to it, and tracking the effectiveness of our advertising to drive attendees. Then we also track, you know, how many registrants we have, how many people show up for the event. But perhaps the biggest way we evaluate whether something's successful is how much active engagement the participant has within the duration of the event. And then ultimately afterwards, whether as part of filling out any surveys or any of the input, whether they would really like a follow-up by our sales engineers to help them explore doing a demo live for their network or exploring deploying the solution. So we really look at it as all the way from just, you know, bringing the awareness to attendance to ultimately whether it translates into a lead that we can give to our sales team to drive forward.
So, you know, it's kind of throwing out a little wider, you know, Maria, as the CMO of one of the larger companies in our industry, kind of what changes do you foresee in business-to-business marketing coming out of the current crisis? Like, how is everybody kind of going to be doing things different in general and for you guys specifically, whatever you can share?
Sure. So even as the social distancing restrictions around the world begin to ease, I think the impact of the coronavirus is going to be felt for years to come, also in marketing. I think what you'll start seeing from a lot of businesses is more focus on e-commerce. It was already a focus for us at Keysight this year, but suddenly it becomes much more so as to how can you provide equipment, capability, solutions virtually. Because historically, we've been much more so a face-to-face type of company. So now we want to be able to enable a lot of things electronically. And, you know, as unheard of as even 3 months ago, you know, I can see companies now choosing to say, I'm going to potentially just do a virtual event only versus a face-to-face one, even when they are allowed to attend in-person events in the future, just because we're seeing, you know, different geographies ease up differently. So you may not see this turn on as quickly as you'd like. That's not to say that we're not going to see in-person events. We're social creatures. We enjoy the human interaction. But I think we'll have learned a lot about virtual events, and we will be certainly adding more of them to our marketing mix as we go forward for things we find to be very effective. From my perspective, though, call me old-fashioned, but I still like that human face-to-face interaction, but it's nice to supplement it for times when I can't be there with something virtual.
Yeah, I would agree with you. There's like some of the best ideas come out when people are actually together in person. Carl, did you have anything you wanted to add to kind of what you think might be happening in the B2B marketplace after post-COVID-19?
Well, I would just say that I certainly agree. For us at Horizon House, Microwave Journal, Signal Integrity Journal, you know, the live events are critical. You know, we attend a lot of them across the industries. And, you know, the opportunity to engage with people and to discuss different opportunities, find out what people are doing is, you know, is critical to what we do. So you can do that to some extent with virtual events, and obviously we're doing more as Keysight is and many others, but I think you can't really replace that, you know, the live event, and it'll be interesting to see how events adapt to accommodate the current situation. I think that they will, and they're planning these things now, but like Maria, I can't, you know, I can't wait until live events are live again, and we're able to attend those and to see everybody in the community, because it is about community, and you know, ours is a very tight-knit one, and I think it'll be nice when we're all together.
Agreed on all fronts. So thank you both so much for your time today. I think it was a great talk. Our next and final interview in this series builds on this discussion with a look at how to make the most of podcasts and webinars. And thank you both for joining me today. And thank you to our audience also.